When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid. High amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey, Lark, I just got the best new earbuds. They're called Et from Studio.com. They're so comfortable and weatherproof.
Hey, I got a pair too. They're my first earbuds and they're fantastic. They come in their own little wireless charger case with a USB cord.
You can charge them anywhere and play them for up to 6 hours on a single charge. And I can use them with my iPhone, my laptop, or even my iPad Pro.
They're Bluetooth and noise canceling, and the built-in mic is great for making phone calls.
And they're pink. I just love them. Did I mention they're pink?
They come in several colors, actually. Anyone can get them on Studio.com. Just use the code KUDZU for 15% off. KUDZU. Are you ready for another Halloween story?
I am. This is our fourth day. Can you believe it?
I know. I'm so excited.
So what do you got for us today?
Well, since I know you and I both like to basically base things on true stories, I wanted to do a story on who are the real women behind the myth of the witch.
Sounds good to me.
I hope that I can bring you the experience of the horror of the tortured and accused to discover the truth behind the terrifying legend of the witch trials and executions. So you ready?
Cool. I'm ready.
Basically, they were our mothers, our grandmothers, our sisters, and our daughters. These were the wise women, but they were the scapegoats. So in the 16th century, it was a pretty dangerous time to be different. Many people believed that witches were part of a conspiracy who were given magical powers by the devil to destroy the human race. So most of these who were branded as witches were women.
Of course.
Yeah.
They all hate us.
Well, you were just saying that on your other story. Mm. So your other story about exorcism that basically they, you know, killed her for that reason, I think. Anyway. They were branded as witches because they were seen as the more wicked of the sects. As mass paranoia spread across Europe, thousands of innocent people were sentenced to death. The imagination and creativity for torture just really holds no bounds. And that was even more true throughout 1642 to 1651. So this is a short period of time we're going to talk about. Sadistic English witch hunters' careers flourished during what was known as the English Civil War. There was even a handbook, a sort of how-to, to discern if someone was a witch. And one One of the main sources for practicing witch hunters was a book called Malleus Maleficarum, which translates to Hammer of the Witches. Now, just a little side note on that. It is in the feminine pronunciation rather than the masculine. So keep that in mind. The book outlines numerous ways to identify and persecute witches. The book's concept of sorcery is characterized by the conviction that those guilty engaging in six of these activities. The first one is a pact entered into with the devil.
Okay, how do they prove that?
Oh, believe me, I'm going to tell you. Okay. Sexual relations with the devil. Aerial flight. Yeah, aerial flight for the purpose of attending an assembly presided over by Satan himself.
So we can't use our brooms.
Right. At this particular assembly, those who have initiated entering into said pact, we will see them participate in incest, promiscuous sex, and we're engaging in other things like consumption and slaughter of babies and the practice of maleficent magic. I guess white magic's okay, but maleficent magic is not cool. You have to be convicted of engaging in these six activities. So before 1400, it was pretty rare for anybody to really be persecuted for witchcraft. But the increasingly common persecution of heresy and failure to fully defeat heretics paved the way for later criminal prosecution of witchcraft. By the 15th century, belief in witches was widely accepted in European society. Previously, those convicted of witchcraft typically just suffered penalties, no more harsh than like public penances, such as a day in the stocks, a little humiliation, but they're nothing like we're going to talk about. So their persecution became more brutal following the publication of this book, like I told you, called the Malleus Maleficarum in 1487, as witchcraft became widely accepted as a real and dangerous phenomenon. So this book accuses male and female witches of infanticide, cannibalism, casting evil spells to harm their enemies, as well as, get this, having the power to, quote, steal a man's penis, unquote.
Are you kidding? Okay.
Now, we all know what that means.
Yeah.
They were literally stealing his penis, for those of y'all who were wondering, but.
But stealing his attentions, basically.
Yeah. And especially if his penis no longer found attention, so to speak, or came to attention. The Malleus recommended not only torture, but also deception in order to obtain confession. So they're okay with you torturing and lying to get a confession, right? Because the devil was not going to confess his vile intentions. It was necessary to gain a confession from the human involved. Because the devil's tight-lipped now, you know.
Of course. He's not going to tell you anything unless you give him your soul.
Oh, sign on the dotted line. So the most severe persecutions took place between the years of 1560 and 1630 and largely ended in Europe around 1780. The worst of the worst was a religious fanatic by the name of Matthew Hopkins. Now, he was the self-appointed witch finder general in England from 1644 to 1647. That's a short period of time, y'all. Because in this amount of time, you're going to see how much damage he really did. And if you're a horror buff like me and Kim are, you may recall the 1968 movie called The Witch Finder General with Vincent Price. So that's classic stuff. Y'all check it out. So meanwhile, innocent people died from being just accused of witches. Mostly the victims were women, like we said, but there were a few men involved. And here's the deal. Hopkins was paid generously for his dark deeds that he committed. You know, greed's always made people do questionable things.
Money.
And in the And in the case of Matthew Hopkins, this turned him into a serial killer. So we can really look at it like that because, you know, he got the blood between his teeth and he was a religious zealot, basically. And that just stoked his fire and then the money and it just became insane. So during his time as a witch finder, there were more people hanged for accused witchcraft than there had been in the previous 160 years. Remember, he was only doing this for 3 years. Yeah.
3 years. Wow.
Yeah. So he racked them up. While his witch hunting tactics were questionable at best, the methods continued to be used for years after his death. So let's get going with some of those specifics to force confession of consorting with the devil, just so you know, okay? So the first of the barbaric tortures was, again, with water.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you remember these things. Again, I remember all this stuff from reading it in history and we were kids, but the first thing that comes up is something called a ducking stool. Now, this was a torture device that was primarily used to punish and humiliate women. And when they first started using it, they would just, you know, dunk the woman. They wouldn't really, you know, it was only to teach her a lesson. They didn't let it go all the way to death. And the contraption resembled a sort of seesaw with the chair affixed to one end, if you can picture that, you know. And then somebody on the other end had like a rope and they'd pull it up and down. So the device was placed along the edge of a river and the offender would be strapped into the chair. And then they were repeatedly plunged into the ice cold river until they confessed, or basically the crowd thought she'd had enough and got taught her lesson, her punishment. Right. Sometimes that was the punishment. You know what I mean?
Right.
Anyway, but this was meant to elicit a confession. But when that didn't always work for the witch finder's satisfaction, they started up their game to full on water torture. And this quickly morphed into something called the swimming test. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Uh-huh. For me, I just can't stand when logic is used against, you know, there's no fighting.
Right.
So the swimming test was another method that Hopkins used. And by his logic, witches float in the water. That proved their guilt. So since that proved their guilt, since witches were believed to have spurned the sacrament of baptism and water is so pure, its purity would repel a witch. Supposedly, the water would reject their body and prevent them from submerging. Well, during the test, the suspect would be bound with a rope tied around their arms and legs and sometimes tied to a chair. Well, I'm sure y'all are ahead of me now, but an innocent person would sink like a stone, right?
Right.
Uh-huh. But a witch would simply bob on the surface. So the result was usually death. Either way, of course. Regardless. Of course. Yeah, regardless.
Oh, look, she was innocent. She didn't come up.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God, she's floating. Let's. So if she floated, if she floated, they drug her out and then she was hung or hanged. Hung.
So that's a perfect example of damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Well, absolutely. I just was thinking, you know, you can't win for losing is how we say it in the South. So, you know, those crafty witch finders were always covering their bases. So another atrocious form of torture used to manipulate accused witches into admitting their guilt was something called pressing.
Oh, yeah.
Now, for some reason, again, I remember this one freaked me out the most as a kid. And I don't know why, but it's not even more than burning at the stake stuff. It just freaked me out so much. I don't know. I guess maybe I could feel it or thought I had a past life, if you know what I mean. So the witches in question had a board laid on top of them, and their accusers then would place heavy rocks on the board until they either confessed or they were literally just crushed to death. You know, pressing to death might take several days and not necessarily with a continued increase in the load. So basically it could take as long as they wanted to possibly stretch this out. I don't think he was paid by, you know, the time. I think he was paid by the person. So I don't know how long this one particular witch finder would pull it out. But
That was used in Salem too, wasn't it? The pressing. Everybody thinks of Salem as burning at the stake. But in Salem, they didn't burn at the stake. They did other kinds of torture until death. And I believe pressing was one of them.
I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah. And so we're still not talking about England, but yeah, I think the pressing was the main deal back then. And so to continue on with their merciless, bizarre, and cruel stuff, a really bizarre form of counter magic to identify suspected evildoers was something called a witch cake, which was considered a supernatural dessert to identify suspicious witches. Now, I have not heard of this one. believe it or not.
I haven't either.
Have you?
No.
Well.
But they do poison it, and if they died, they were innocent.
No, it's kind of disgusting. So I should have mentioned that from the get-go, but this is disgusting. So in the event of someone, say someone has a mysterious illness or what they deem a possession, right? The witch hunters mm-hmm. would take a sample of the victim's urine and put it in a rye meal with ashes and bake it into a cake.
Ew.
Yeah. So they would take this disgusting concoction and then they would feed it to a dog or something that they thought was the helper, animal helper, or familiar of the witch. And then they expected and were hopeful that the animal would fall under the spell of the cake and reveal and speak the name of the guilty sorcerer. Another test... I can't wait to hear your comment on this. I love it. Another test was, if you were the owner of a cat, you were more likely to be considered a witch.
keeping my mouth shut.
I'm telling you, Kim, I'm freaking doomed. Because you know how many cats I have. Uh-huh. So most cats during the Tudor period in England were burned, sadly, or otherwise destroyed because of the fear that they would attract evil. And so if you think about it, you might recall that a lot of the royalty kept pets, but mm-hmm. mostly they had dogs and monkeys, but they never had cats.
Maybe that's why the plague ran so rampant, because there weren't any cats to eat the rats, and the rats were what carried the plague.
See?
Just a supposition there.
Mm-hmm. Neener, neener. Y'all be nice to your cats. Oh, here's one you're really going to love. Now, I don't know. I just don't even know how I would fare with this one. But another test required that a suspected witch would be weighed against a stack of Bibles.
In Monty Python, it was a duck, right?
I know. Yeah, exactly. Does the duck float? So if the accused weighed more than the Bibles, she was innocent.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I would have thought the other way. I don't know why.
Well.
Because, you know, they're backwards.
Did I look at that wrong? Yeah. If she weighed more than the Bible, she was innocent.
Mm.
However, if she was lighter than the stack, she was deemed a witch and punished accordingly.
It couldn't possibly be because she was thin.
And tiny. And underfed and malnourished.
My daughter would have been probably burned at the stake.
Well, get in line, tiny. Sister. Although my reason would not be because I'm tiny. So, I mean, I think we can all see a flaw in this plan, just kind of, you know, throw another Bible on the stack, right?
Mm.
So witch hunters often had their suspects stripped and publicly examined for signs of any unsightly blemishes that witches were said to have received upon making their pact with Satan. So
you better not have a mole or a pimple or a boil. God forbid that you have a boil.
Oh my God. Ooze and pus everywhere. Are you kidding me? So this devil's mark could supposedly change shape and color and was believed to be numb and insensitive to pain. Prosecutors might also search for what they would call the witch's tit. And that that was an extra nipple allegedly used to suckle the witch's helper with blood.
A third nipple like Chandler Bing on Friends.
Well, I am not going to call out a name here, but I have a friend who loves to tell everybody she has a third nipple. And I'm like, I'm not touching that comment with a 10-foot pole.
She might want to stop doing that. There may be some of these people still out there.
She's in her 70s, so I'm thinking she's not going to tell. It's not going to stop now. So anyway, but this third nipple thing really seemed to be one of their faves. So in any case, it was easy, even for the most minor physical imperfections, to be labeled as the work of the devil, you know? And I can't even imagine, right? What if you had, the first thing that popped to my mind was, what if you had a port wine stain birthmark, you know, like Gorbachev?
Well, that's what I was going to say. A birthmark. A lot of cultures were very suspicious of birthmarks back then. They did think it was the sign of the devil. So, you know.
Well, you know, I have a birthmark in the middle of my back where it might be a little bit lower than what you might consider a tramp stamp, right? But in the middle mm-hmm. of the birthmark is a tiny little star of a hole. And mm-hmm. My mom always teases that that's where they cut my tail off.
I'm not going to make any comment to that one either.
I know. But anyway, it is like, it's just, you know, I mean, I don't even want to speculate the possibilities, right? Anyhow, so moles and scars and birthmarks and even just sores or the extra mm-hmm. nipple thing or tattoos, mm-hmm. all this stuff could easily qualify. So, you know, the examiners really came up in empty handed, right? And mm-hmm. so to make it this even worse, like sadly, these desperate villagers who kind of knew what was going on, they would sometimes burn off these things or cut them off or cut off any of these offending marks on their bodies. And so then they'd have these wounds, and now the wounds were labeled as proof of the covenant with the devil.
Right, right.
So again, like I said, they can't win for losing then. So if the witch hunter struggled to find obvious evidence of a witch's marks on a suspect's body, they might resort to the ghastliness of something called pricking. Okay. Pricking was where they took needles and pins and bodkins and knives, anything that would normally seem to elicit pain.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would touch all these places, the moles and the scars and this and that, right? And right. keep in mind, because of the fat fees on offer for convictions, many, if not most, prickers, that's what they were called, were flat out con men, really, and they were using fraudulent methods. So they had, you know, special little gizmos or devices for prickers used that were specially designed to have retractable points and stuff, so that it only appeared as if the end had pierced the skin, but there's no blood, you know what I mean? So there you right. go. So the theory was that if the area in question did not bleed or cause pain to the suspected witch when a sharp object pierced it, then she was just the genuine article. She was proof with a pact again of with the devil, right?
Right.
So now get this, you're going to love this. In Scotland, and my people are Scottish, Cuba's people are Irish.
And Scottish, yeah.
Well, we're kind of mixed, but mine have a little more Scottish than Irish. So anyway, in Scotland, the task was carried out by a specialist group of professional prickers.
Did they have an association?
Don't laugh. Yes, they did. They had a guild. Yes, they did. Yes, ma'am, they did. This group was so well respected and established that they even had their own guild, and they could actually command pretty hefty fees.
The Royal Guild of Prickers.
Anyway.
Oh, jeez.
I'm sorry. So in the 17th century, a good witch pricker could command a fee of 6 shillings per day for maintenance. That's, you know.
That's a lot of money.
Well, wait a minute. That's just his time and travel and food and board, okay? So while he was carrying out his task, but for every witch that he identified, guess how much he got? Girl, he got 6 pounds.
Wow.
That's a whole lot
that's
in the
ton.
17th century. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So lots of folks were making bank on this little sadistic task in the name of the church. Along with pricking, the unfortunate suspect might also be subject to something called scratching by their supposed victims. Now, that's if they have scratches, if the witch has the scratch on her from her victim.
Right.
This conclusion was based on the notion that possessed people found relief by scratching the person responsible with their fingernails until they drew blood. We're rationalizing again, right?
Mm-hmm.
If their symptoms improved after clawing at the accused skin, it was seen as partial evidence of guilt. Basically, just about anything could get you accused and convicted of being a witch if that's what the witch finder wanted.
Of
you
course.
Know? Yeah. So get this. Oh, Kim. So we have to take this to heart. Even mumbling to yourself. That's me. So if someone overheard you talking to yourself, girl, I'm in trouble. I talk to myself all the time. And even worse, guess what? I talk to the cats. So I'm in double trouble, right?
Well, I talk to the dogs, and most of the time I scream at my computer.
Well, we're already down for the count. So yeah. More evidence of supernatural misconduct was being accused of someone seeing you in their dream. So if I dreamt about you and you were in my dream, I could point the finger at you.
That makes sense because I've invaded your dreams.
You're in my mind. it out. Mm-hmm. So that was considered magical to visit them in their dreams. And ultimately, if swimming or pressing doesn't kill you, and you're still confirmed as a witch, you could be hung or hauled off to be burned alive at the stake, wherein you would be lashed to the stake and a pyre would be lit below you. Now, I'm going to tell y'all what that feels like, because I looked it up. Okay. If you ever wondered what it might feel like and how you might actually die, the amount of pain experienced is greatest at the beginning of the burning process. And really before the flame.
That makes sense.
Burns off the nerves.
Yeah.
Once the skin is gone, so they say, it doesn't hurt.
Well, yeah, because all your nerve endings have been seared off. And so.
Right. Now, many victims die quickly from suffocation as the hot gases damage your respiratory tract. And those who survive the burning frequently die within days as the lungs, alveoli, I hope I said that right, fill with fluid and the victim dies of pulmonary edema. Now, I'm just gonna pitch something here. So when I was researching burning at the stake for my book, Flames of Rapture, Kim remembers that.
Mm-hmm.
Kim was my partner in editing and all things awesome. But when I did that research, I also found out that there were some compassionate executioners back in the day, and they would actually slip a little necklace around their, you know, maybe a string, a necklace around their neck with a small packet of gunpowder around their necks to make things go quickly, shall we say, and not hours of suffering.
That makes sense. I read at some point that they would also sometimes give them poison so that they would die basically before they started burning.
Right. They just wanted them to go peacefully, and they were having compassion. And even if they had given them poison, they didn't really understand that that might not have been as compassionate as they thought, but you never know.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, legends say that this type of execution was chosen, as in burning, in order to make sure that the soul of the wizard or witch that was burned, so that it wouldn't come back to haunt each other. So that's my story. And I'm thinking it's a lot easier to be a witch today than it used to be.
Yeah, I would imagine so. People aren't out to look for, hunt you down and kill you. So,
well, you know, they were making money on it. Anytime you can make a buck, there they are.
Yep.
You know,
well, that was a good one. Thanks for talking about that.
Well, thanks, because all the witches I know were awesome. Hey, y'all.
Alrighty then.
So happy Halloween to everybody. We have a few more stories, don't we, Kim?
Well, we have one more. We got a Friday story coming. Yeah.
Our week is already almost up. Oh, my gosh.
Well, it was fast.
Well, y'all be sure to celebrate Halloween. But before you do, come back tomorrow, because there's another story, and we will see you then. Thank you.
Bye-bye, y'all.
Guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy.
Chumba. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.